We've got the first bank failure of 2026. Yesterday, Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust of Chicago, Illinois, was taken into receivership by the FDIC. And while the failure of this small bank in Chicago isn't necessarily a massive contagion risk to the entire banking system or a big systemic threat to the economy, the underlying causes of this bank failure absolutely are a systemic risk to the economy, and I believe we're going to see many more stories like this. This bank was caused by a combination of factors, including unresolved issues that caused the 2023 banking crisis, private equity, and commercial real estate, and this game of extend and pretend that all of Wall Street and the banking system has been engaged in for several years finally caught up with this tiny little bank. What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and on Friday, we got this one from the FDIC. First Independence Bank of Detroit, Michigan, assumes all deposits of Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust of Chicago, Illinois. And why does this happen on Friday? Because that's when banks always fail on Fridays. That's not when the event happens. That's just when the government tells us, because statistically, people are less likely to panic and go run banks if we tell them about a bank failure on Friday when they're all busy starting with their weekend. Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust was closed today by the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, which appointed the FDIC as receiver. The FDIC entered into a purchase and assumption agreement with First Independence Bank to assume substantially all deposits of Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust. So this is what the FDIC does when a bank fails. They negotiate the sale of the pieces of this bank to another bank so that there's a seamless transition. If you were a customer at Metropolitan Capital Bank, your money is safe. The FDIC has insured you. When you wake up Monday, you will find yourself a customer of the First Independence Bank. If you had a loan with this old bank, now your loan is with the new bank. You should continue making payments as you usually do. And here the FDIC gives us an indicator of the size of this bank and the size of the failure. As of September 30th, 2025, Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust reported total assets of $261.1 million and total deposits of $212.1 million. First Independence Bank agreed to assume substantially all deposits at the time of closing. It will also purchase approximately $251 million of the failed bank's assets. The FDIC will retain the remaining assets for later disposition. So for whatever reason, $10 million of these assets, they don't want to put that on the market right away, or they couldn't get this First Independence Bank to agree to buy them, probably because those assets are toxic and not worth anything, certainly not the $10 million that's being advertised. But you'll also notice here, as of September, Metropolitan Capital Bank had assets of $261 million and deposits of $212 million. This bank should have been okay. There's a nice big capital cushion in there. And as you'll see as we go through this, that actually wasn't the case. The FDIC preliminarily estimates that the failure will cost the Deposit Insurance Fund about $19.7 million. The estimate will change over time as retained assets are sold. So that last sentence, as the retained assets are sold, they're pretty much telling us that $10 million we're hanging on to, it ain't $10 million. Also, $19.7 million hit to the Deposit Insurance Fund. That's interesting. This press release makes no mention of insured versus uninsured deposits, but based on the hit to the DIF, it's suggesting that the FDIC has once again insured and protected all of the deposits at this bank. Now, that's something that the FDIC has been arbitrarily enforcing. You may recall when Silicon Valley and Signature Bank failed, everybody got everything back, even though according to FDIC insurance, you're only supposed to get $250,000 back. Now contrast that with what happened at the First National Bank of Lindsay, something I did a lot of coverage of there. The uninsured depositors at the First National Bank in Lindsay, Oklahoma, only got half of their uninsured deposits back. So the FDIC is picking winners and losers here. Banks in Chicago, those customers get everything back. Banks in flyover country, well, we don't really care about that. I'll put a link down in the description to my videos of the First National Bank of Lindsay. That's a pretty wild story. You're probably going to want to check that one out too. But as it pertains to this bank here, we're looking at some pretty substantial losses. As of September of last year, this bank had a nice big capital cushion. That has all evaporated, plus $19.7 million hit to the Deposit Insurance Fund, and maybe that gets even bigger. That means there was some garbage assets lingering on the balance sheet of this bank, and the bank wasn't exactly forthcoming or accurate with the value of those assets, something that is increasingly common in the U.S. banking system. And it turns out Metropolitan Capital was no stranger to trouble with the regulators. Back in September of 2019, we got this one in Crane Chicago Business, a bank wrapped by regulators for lending practices. Yes, it still happens. Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust, launched 14 years ago, must clean up its lending act in Chicago, San Francisco, and New York, where it makes loans to wealthy business people, according to a new consent order. That consent order is basically a legal document from the FDIC that says, hey, bank, you suck at what you're doing here. You're making risky loans. You're now a risk to the FDIC and the Deposit Insurance Fund. You better shape up. And this consent order was terminated a few months later, so apparently the regulators were satisfied with whatever actions the bank took to correct that back in 2019, even though here we are 6 years later, and the bank has failed. Now, there's a couple of things I do right away whenever I hear about a bank failure. One of those is to look into the leadership at this bank, and this jumped right out at me as I was doing this. Within a couple of minutes of researching this bank, I found this Glassdoor posting for Chief Financial Officer at Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust. Now, this job has been posted for 30 plus days, suggesting the bank doesn't have a CFO. And I am not a banker, but I suspect the chief financial officer might be a relatively important position at a bank. And it turned out the bank's prior CFO, Norman Rainey, left back in October of last year. There was no press release, no explanation offered on the company website or the bank's Facebook page. Norman Rainey left in October. They posted the job on Glassdoor, and the position has been sitting vacant ever since. But CFO wasn't the only recent leadership change at this bank. The bank's CEO, Michael Rose, also left in July of last year, just a few months before the CFO quit. Michael Rose had been the bank's CEO since its inception in 2005. Replacing Michael Rose in the CEO role is the man who currently occupies that position, Frank Novel. Now, suffice it to say, the bank's CEO and CFO both leaving within a couple of months of each other, and no announcement from the bank, no press release, no explanation offered on the Facebook page or the website. Something of a red flag. So whenever a bank fails in order to figure out what was going on, the first thing I typically do is pull that bank's balance sheet from their most recent filings. And here is for the quarter ended September 30th of 2025 for Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust. You'll see here under their assets column, there's some interesting information. Now, one of the first things that I want to point out is under their assets column, we've got this held to maturity and available for sale securities. And the interesting thing here is that there are no held to maturity assets on their balance sheet and $52.5 million worth of available for sale securities. So you may recall back when Silicon Valley Bank failed, losses on U.S. Treasuries was a major contributing factor there. And one of the ways that the banks were hiding losses on U.S. Treasuries was by taking them out of available for sale securities, where they marked them accurately to the market value, and they put them into a category called held to maturity, where they're basically saying what it's going to be worth 10, 20, 30 years from now when it matures. This bank was not doing that. So this bank was not hiding their losses from U.S. Treasuries, and as interest rates rise, U.S. Treasuries lose value. So this bank did take some losses. We'll see it elsewhere in their balance sheet, but they weren't hiding them, at least not for U.S. Treasuries. Now, the most important category in the bank's balance sheet is this number right here, $145.5 million sitting in the bank's loan book. This is the only category big enough to be responsible for the $19.7 million hit to the deposit insurance fund, plus the $4 million of bank capital that was lost, plus the $10 million of questionable assets that's still sitting on the balance sheet of the FDIC. Whatever actually killed this bank is probably living in this category. Now, here you can see the $261.1 million of total assets that this bank had. And then under the liabilities column, you can see $256.9 million worth of liabilities. So on paper, the difference between the assets and the liabilities, this bank was really only worth about $4 million. Now, something else that stuck out on the bank's balance sheet is this number here, $43 million in other borrowed money. The lion's share of that is $40 million worth of advances from Federal Home Loan Banks, or FHLBs. Now, Federal Home Loan Banks are banks for banks by banks. A whole bunch of banks get together, they create one of these Federal Home Loan Banks, and they kind of act as emergency lenders to their member banks. They're widely considered to be the lender of next to last resort. If a bank is in trouble, they can go to an FHLB for a loan. And then their last resort, if the FHLB won't even loan to them, you can go to the Fed's discount window, which if word gets out, you're tapping the Fed's discount window, forget it, your bank is done. So a big surge in borrowings from FHLBs here, $40 million for a bank that only had $261 million in assets. That's a sign that this bank has really been in deep trouble for a long time. Now, also noteworthy on this bank's balance sheet is their retained earnings. You'll see up there in parentheses, $15.6 million of retained earnings. And when that number is in parentheses, that means negative. So this bank has actually been operating at a loss for quite some time here, accumulating this big deficit that takes a big chunk out of the bank's capital buffer. Now, also noteworthy here is that negative $9 million there in parentheses of accumulated other comprehensive income. That is unrealized losses on securities, mostly U.S. Treasuries, possibly other bonds. Now, that's interesting because that was the primary failure mechanism for the Silicon Valley Bank failure. Silicon Valley Bank took a big hit when they sold some U.S. Treasuries back in 2023 in order to meet an increasing amount of withdrawals from their depositors. When they took that loss, it spooked their customers who all tried to withdraw their money at the same time, leading to the run on the bank. And the FDIC came in and bailed out that bank, bailed out all the uninsured depositors in order to stop that bank run, which by the time they stopped it had spread to Signature and First Republic and several other banks. Now, while the regulators were successful in stopping that stampede for the exits and the run on those banks, the problem never went away. And you can see here, Metropolitan Capital Bank lost $9 million because of unrealized losses on treasury securities and other bonds. Now, that may not be the primary failure mode of this bank, but it was certainly a contributing cause. And it goes to show you that issue that caused the bank runs in 2023, it never really went away. It's just been lingering on the balance sheets waiting to cause problems. So while unrealized losses from U.S. Treasuries and other bonds is certainly a contributing factor to the failure of this bank, I don't believe it was the primary cause, especially because those losses are already accounted for in the bank's most recent filings, and therefore they wouldn't be responsible for that $20 million hit to the deposit insurance fund or the $4 million of lost bank capital. Based on my review of the bank's website and some recent headlines, I believe the primary failure mode of this bank is private equity and commercial real estate and the ongoing phenomenon of extend and pretend, where the entire economy, Wall Street, and the banking system is sitting on these assets at bloated valuations, knowing these assets are not worth anywhere near what they're claiming they're worth, unable to sell them, and doing all of these silly financial maneuvers to extend the duration of the debt and pretend the assets are still worth what they're claiming they're worth. Meanwhile, they're actually sitting on massive losses. And I believe this bank was unable to hide that any longer. And there's a couple of clues to that effect on the bank's website, metcapbank.com. And this is under their investment banking page, where they're talking about leverage buyouts and secondary market transactions. Now, under leverage buyouts, they're saying Metropolitan Capital has the ability to leverage the financial strength of either debt or equity in any given transaction by sourcing capital from a wide number of investment partners or, when appropriate, use its own balance sheet to advise, market facilitate, and fund debt, as well as equity, enabling maximum versatility in providing the optimal source for our clients. So what they're talking about here, a leverage buyout, is basically when a private equity firm buys a private business, but they buy it with money borrowed by that business. They basically saddle the target company with debt and use that borrowed money to buy it out. Now, what MetCap is doing here is they're saying, when appropriate, we'll use our own balance sheet, meaning we will make these loans for leverage buyouts. And remember, that $145 million loan book that's on the bank's balance sheet, that's really the only explanation for losses big enough to result in that $20 million hit to the deposit insurance fund. Now, recently, I've done some videos about companies that failed after leverage buyouts by private equity, in particular 4840, a pallet company, and United Site Services, a porta potty company. I had some fun with that one. There are stories all over the economy of private equity firms buying private companies through leverage buyouts, saddling those companies with debt, ostensibly to reinvest in the business, but really what they do is pay themselves massive dividends, taking big profits, looting the company dry, And then, of course, the company inevitably fails and everybody gets laid off and the debt goes bad. Now, another factor they're talking about here is secondary market transactions, where they actively match buyers and sellers of pre-IPO securities, private stocks, limited partnership interests, and other illiquid securities through an independent platform. Now, secondary market transactions is another one of those extend and pretend phenomenon that we've seen going on lately. These private equity firms, typically what they do is they buy a company, they sit on it for a couple of years, grow the business, eventually they'll take that company public via IPO, and that's how they cash out of the investment. The problem is a lot of these PE firms bought these companies in 2020 when interest rates were very low and the economy was booming because of all the printed stimmy cash. Now we've got the K-shaped economy that isn't doing very well with much higher interest rates. And so they're unable to IPO these companies. They're stuck with the assets and their investors want profits. So what a lot of them are doing is secondary market transactions where they raise money in a new fund and then use that money to pay off the investors from the old fund. It's a very Ponzi-like system that they have there, all because they're unable to sell these assets because they're not worth what they're claiming they're worth. And so this bank apparently specializes in these secondary market transactions. It's another part of this private equity and private credit extend and pretend scenario that is rampant in the economy. And I also believe commercial real estate is partially responsible for the failure of this bank. And I found a specific example of that in this one from The Real Deal from back in April of last year. Barkett's Condor hit with foreclosure on stalled Old Town site. Now, this article is all about this big shot real estate investor in Chicago named Saul Barkett, who has been trying to get a hotel built. For more than 5 years, Barkett's firm, Condor Partners, has eyed building a 12-story hotel he wants to call the Duke of Wells on the property at 1520 to 1528 North Wells Street. But the developer is now being dinged with a foreclosure lawsuit, the second it has faced on a major commercial redevelopment project in recent months. Canadian lender CIBC Bank claims it's owed more than $10.2 million after Condor and Barkett, who guaranteed the loan, defaulted on the debt back in 2021. The loan was originally provided in 2018 and was modified several times to give the borrower more time to pay it off. Now, this article still hasn't even mentioned Metropolitan Capital Bank, but you can see here this Canadian lender is saying, hey, Saul Barkett, you owe us $10 million for this hotel you tried to build. It's never going to get built. And we've already modified your loan several times. And it's that loan modification. We've seen that. That's one of those extend and pretend phenomenons. We're seeing that with private equity. We're seeing that with commercial real estate, even with auto loans being modified, where they extend the duration, lower the interest rate, whatever they have to do to make it look like the borrower is actually able to make the payments, sometimes even falsifying it to make it look like the borrower is current on the payments when they're not. And CIBC did this several times with this $10 million loan. But that wasn't even the only loan on this property. Condor also took on additional debt against the Well Street property the same year with a $4 million junior loan from Metropolitan Capital Bank and Trust. Now get this, that portion of the debt package has been modified a whopping 15 times since 2020 to provide Barkett and his firm more time to pay it off, public records show. 15 times Metropolitan Bank and Trust allowed this guy, Saul Barkett, this deadbeat real estate investor, to modify his loan to make it look like he could make the payments. Now, if this one loan was modified 15 times to make it look current, just imagine what might be lurking on the rest of that $145 million loan book that we saw on the balance sheet. This is obviously a major contributing factor to what caused this bank to fail. So long story short, the failure of this small $261 million bank is not this looming threat to the entire economy. It's not a contagion risk. It's not going to be a cascade of bank failures. It's going to take one after another down with it. But the underlying causes of this bank failure absolutely are a systemic risk to the economy. The issues from 2023 with the unrealized losses on U.S. Treasuries, that has not gone away. Private equity is this huge shell game that's going on with the secondary offerings, moving investments back and forth, raising money from new investors to pay off old investors, extend and pretend while companies are looted and debt gets defaulted on left and right. And of course, commercial real estate, which has also been extending and pretending with that one example of a loan we found from this very bank being extended 15 times. just since 2020. It's not hard to see why this bank failed. I can't point to any one specific thing and say, yep, this is what failed it. But I can point to several specific things and say, combined, this is absolutely enough to fail this bank, which had already been on the brink of failure because of the negative retained earnings and the losses from U.S. Treasuries, the CEO and the CFO jumping ship last year inexplicably, the big borrowings from Federal Home Loan banks. This was inevitable. And I suspect this isn't going to be the last one. All the things that plague this particular bank are widespread, especially among community banks in the U.S., and so I think we'll probably be seeing more like this in the months and years ahead. Till next time, live small and dream big.